Hi, I'm Tyler Smith.
And I'm Alexandria Hadara. Welcome to Global Takes, America's number one podcast discussing global issues from the Black perspective.
It's time for our voices to be at the forefront of foreign politics and innovation. This is Global Takes.
China has identified the cause of the
mysterious new virus.
Coronavirus.
There are fears a rapidly spreading virus has reached Australia.
This is a rapidly emerging situation where there is not a cause for alarm.
The first US case has been detected.
There's confirmation the coronavirus has reached Australia.
Today we're going to have a discussion about vaccine equity. It's November 2021, and we are still facing a global pandemic. Only 53% of the world population has received their first dose. Is it fair for rich nations to focus on vaccinating their population first before sharing doses with the rest of the world? If one country is fully vaccinated, does that leave the door open for more variants to form in other places? Today, we are going to talk to Dr. Abubakar Campo. He is the Director of Health Programs at UNICEF. Dr. Campbell has served as UNICEF representative in Afghanistan and Cote d'Ivoire and has held senior leadership positions across various international NGOs and UN agencies over the last 15 years. An expert in humanitarian aid and development, Dr. Campbell has also served as a physician and surgeon in rural and urban hospitals in Africa and Asia. Let's welcome him on Global Take. Yes, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. You've had such a distinguished career. I know your official title with UNICEF is with Director of Health Programs. Can you tell us just a little bit about that role and how that possibly evolved into focusing on issues of the pandemic?
Sure. The Director of Program Health is overseeing all the different health programs worldwide. So I'm the global chief of health, if you would like to have a shorter version of my title. Mm-hmm. So we're providing guidance to our regional office, to country offices, on health matters. Currently, our biggest topic is really pushing, primary healthcare and health system strengthening, on top of the health agenda globally. That's just really one of our priorities right now. And yes, you're absolutely right. With COVID-19, the agenda has been shifted quite significantly. I think a lot of my time is now also diverted to responding to COVID-19, but also looking at how can we be better prepared for any other pandemic. So looking at what were the failures of the health systems before, what needs to be addressed. So these are the global discussions that we are participating in. And we are supporting our country offices and regional offices to really get this pandemic under control. As you may know that UNICEF is responsible, for the global distributions of vaccines under the COVAX facility. We are also supporting countries in their preparedness of receiving the vaccines and conducting these rollouts. We are fully aware that there has been quite a big inequities in distribution of the vaccines, not necessarily because of the inefficiency of the COVAX facility, but just because of the availability of vaccines, of the supply of vaccines towards the COVAX facility has not really lived up to the expectation. And that's the reasons why some parts of the world have not yet received, their fully fledged portion of vaccines. There's a lot of politics, geopolitics involved in this, which cannot necessarily be addressed. Otherwise, we would say that, the COVAX facility was a good idea in terms of equitably the redistribution of vaccines, but not everyone played by the ball, and this led to those inequities which we're seeing right now. Not because, I'm repeating and I'm emphasizing it, not because of the inefficiency of COVAX, but just because of the political landscapes and politics around, the response to the pandemic. I think we're getting better. I think the supply chain will be a little bit better towards the end of the year. But countries also need to be prepared and really in terms of uptake also of vaccines. I know that the difficulties at the beginning of the pandemic has also led to vaccine hesitancies, other issues within the countries, which now needs to be addressed. But hopefully, things will be getting better and we will be improving and we will get the pandemic under control in the near future.
Around 214 million doses of coronavirus vaccines have been given in the United States, including 200 million since President Joe Biden took office. He wants to push the number further by announcing a tax incentive for businesses providing vaccine-related paid leave to their employees. On the global front, Biden said he is trying to do more.
We're looking at what is going to be done with some of the vaccines that we are not using. We got to make sure they are safe to be sent. And we hope to be able to be of some help and value to countries around the world.
I think it is a struggle. I mean, we need to recognize. I think, if you do not follow the science fully, it leads to these kind of situations. You know, if politics takes over science, then we're making some of the decisions, where we think that, we need to respond to a political need to vaccinate our population first. It gets then into the situations where we drain the supply globally, and then we're leaving out science. I mean, the science should have told us that, we should be vaccinating all the population at risks and those populations which are driving the pandemic, before we extend to the rest of the populations. But, it is what it is. Some countries are having other political pressures, and they think that in acting in such a way, this will be maintaining their agenda or their political agenda on the steady first course, which derails a little bit. So instead of being in the pandemic for 2 or 3 years, we will be in this pandemic for 5 or 6 years,
Oh, really? That's the projection.
I'm speculating here, but I mean, not making, scientific decisions, will lead us off prolonging, these pandemics, and no one knows how long it will be taking us. As you rightly mentioned, if you're 100% vaccinated if your population is 100% vaccinated in one country and you have 80% of the rest of the global not been vaccinated, you still have possibilities of having new variants. And if, God forbid, that there is a variant, against which the current vaccines are not basically available. If you have a variant surging, emerging like this, then even the United States, which might have, or any country which might have 100% of the population vaccinated, will have to start from ground zero again, because we have a new variant against which the existing vaccines are not basically working on. So that's the reasons why, we should be following science fully and not just taking one part of the science and then get submerged by a political agenda, which distorts a little bit the response which we're having right now.
Most countries on the continent have begun administering vaccines which have been delivered through the COVAX initiative. The exceptions are Burkina Faso, Chad, Tanzania and Eritrea, where no vaccines have been approved. Now, most countries are using AstraZeneca, but still Africa has the lowest vaccination rate of any continent, with less than 1% of the population immunized.
What do you think about, like, with Africa and its back and how its response to the COVID crisis? I know they still have the lowest number of cases and deaths worldwide for various explanations on why that is the case. But do you get a sense that there's a local manufacturing of vaccines on the ground and like how they're responding to it to make sure that the virus doesn't get completely out of control?
Yes, I think we can say that for now, Africa has been doing relatively well compared to other countries when it comes in terms of numbers. But I think we need to be cautious also with these kind of statements, because it is quite possible that that there has been many waves within the African continent which we might have been unaware, which might be just associated to different diseases because it's just fever, or we haven't really, or those cases where it might not be necessarily be notified. I think it's also important to understand that within Africa, we have quite a number of other infectious diseases which are which are living in concurrence with COVID-19, so which might be overshadowing to a certain extent the extent of the COVID-19 pandemic within the African continent. We're also aware, fully aware, that the population is much younger, so we might be having a lot of COVID-19 cases, but people do not necessarily show up at the health facilities, or we do not might be having a lot of severe cases, while we do have quite a number of cases of COVID-19 as well. So I think we still do not know exactly why Africa is doing relatively. I'm really emphasizing on the term relatively better in terms of statistics. But as we're saying, if we have new variants coming out, we can have a different picture tomorrow, where we're having a much bigger mortality rate on the African continent, because we have a much more severe variant emerging, through mutations. But we do want to believe that, that one of the things which the pandemic has shown us, that we cannot just rely, when it comes to supply, on the existing infrastructure. And I think it is important, that manufacturing capacities of vaccines, of pharmaceuticals, needs to improve across the entire planet. In every continent, there should be multiple facilities who will be able to respond to a pandemic such like COVID-19. I'm saying it in many forums, God mm-hmm. forbid, that we have, a pandemic from a virus, who is as deadly as Ebola, and who spreads as easily as COVID-19. Then I think it would be a disaster for the entire human race. And I think, we're touching wood, and God forbid that it isn't really happening. But if it has happened, if it would happen, no one would be safe on this particular planet. And that's the reasons why, preparedness, looking at global health security should be becoming a priority for everyone. There's a saying, on the African continent, when the tukul or the hut, of your neighbor is burning, well, if you don't help him in putting out the fire, the next hut which will be catching fire is your own hut, And I think we like to say those different proverbs, but we do not necessarily live by those different standards. And I think if we should have learned something from this mm-hmm. COVID-19 pandemic, this is what it should be. We are a global community. The virus has spread as fast as bad news. You see it maybe popping up in one of the countries in less than 72 hours. It's in other countries around the globe. So this virus spread very, very fast. We are still, I think, relatively lucky that, it doesn't have a lethality as strong as other infectious diseases which we know. But, the future might be bringing us much more severe diseases, infectious diseases, who could spread as fast and could be much more lethal than COVID-19.
Okay. Well, speaking of that, in terms of the variant, is there like a time frame between now and when you think the next variant will come? And then with the vaccines that we have, is there like a time? Because I feel like we're racing against time, and still wealthier countries are not taking the heed to that. Like, we don't.
I think that many people who have looked into the crystal ball have been proven wrong by COVID-19. So
yeah.
The only thing what we do know that the possibility is there. And I think we better get prepared, and strengthen health systems everywhere. So make sure that we can respond better and faster to the next pandemic.
Okay. And speaking on that, I know you were based in Afghanistan during much part of the pandemic for your work. What did you notice the nation's response to the global health crisis compared to the United States and in that region in particular? Because I know Middle East, their cases are pretty low. Some countries in the Middle East are pretty low. So in terms of their cases, so what did you notice in Afghanistan particularly?
You're right. I mean, I was the representative of UNICEF in Afghanistan until last year, November. I think Afghanistan has been in a somehow humanitarian context for quite a very long time. I mean, we like to say 20 years, but you know, we can even say over. I mean, the war has been raging in Afghanistan for more than 40 years, even before you know, the presence of the U.S. forces in Afghanistan. We had the Russian forces there as well for a very long time. So I think you know, COVID-19 has also affected them. You know, the pandemic did affect them to a certain extent, but I think it's important to note that they do have also other priorities. So I think you know, it wasn't as felt. I mean, it was felt globally very importantly, and we did you know, respond or trying to respond to the pandemic as well. But you know, there was also a war going on, which had its own impact on the health systems, on security, and how do you conduct programs within Afghanistan. At the beginning of the pandemic, we as UNICEF, together with WHO and other health partners, have been trying to make sure to ensure that PPEs, personal protective equipment, were made available to the country. And everybody struggled at the beginning of the pandemic in last year, 2020, because I think there were shortages of PPE globally, and mm-hmm. sure that you know, that Afghanistan could get their fair share. UNICEF also tried to support the private sector, so manufacturing companies in Afghanistan who were you know, producing soap. We were buying soap for them to redistribute into the community. Because hand washing was part of the pandemic response in sense as well. I think we did what we could to stem the pandemic. The numbers have been relatively, again, you know, relatively low, but there has been waves. You know, we had the same measures as all countries in the world. We had lockdowns, which were more or less respected, I think, in Afghanistan, because you know, you do have quite a large population, a large part of the population who lives under the poverty line, and they cannot be locked down forever. So yes, you know, measures were put in place, but enforcement of those measures, it was quite difficult, because you know, if you live from day to day, you can't just stay home. You need to fetch for your family and provide food as well. If it's mm-hmm. not COVID which kills you, well, it will be hunger. So I think right. we will choose, you know, among those two different, you know, issues. And the choice comes, is pretty clear for many of the population there as well. So I think, you know, we try to maintain, you know, the essential services open during the beginning of the crisis. It was difficult, but, you know, they managed in that sense. And then when the vaccine came, you know, they also tried to start vaccinating their populations as well. This being said, I think, you know, Afghanistan was also affected by the global shortages. So, you know, it's also one of those countries who do not have, you know, huge coverages of persons, people's vaccinated in COVID-19. But, you know, they're facing other challenges as well. You have landmines, you have casualties from the war. And diarrhea and pneumonia are still, you know, major killers among children under fives in Afghanistan. Malnutrition, you know, Afghanistan was also affected by a drought. And we do know that, you know, that there has been financial issues as well as of lately with the retrievals of the U.S. forces from Afghanistan. Not just the U.S. forces, but almost the entire international community in Afghanistan. But, you know, UNICEF is still there. We still continue to operate with a number of agencies, including WHO. And we're trying to see how we can work with different partners to at least keep some of these essential basic social services like health, like education, like water and sanitation afloat. Difficult times ahead, but, you know, that's why we are there.
With hospitals full, a persistent shortfall of oxygen, and a general failure to adopt precautions like masks and social distancing, Afghanistan has entered its worst period yet of the pandemic. for those turned away by doctors, it's a daunting task to get treatment.
Recently met this past Tuesday to discuss about how to avoid a humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan, and he also said they would not recognize the Taliban government. So I was just curious to know, like, how will this affect UNICEF operations on the ground and the distribution of vaccines through COVAX? I just kind of want to get your take on that, on those developments.
UNICEF has been in Afghanistan since 1949. We have never left. You know, we have weathered storms and winters and all challenges, you know. It's not the first time that the Taliban came into power and that the international community has left them. And we were still there. We still continue to operate there. I do want to believe that the G20 has recognized, you know, that, you know, we cannot abandon Afghanistan just like that. I think it's important that, you know, the communities are, the populations are getting some of the support. But we also learned, you know, from experience, you know, if we, you know, the reasons why, you know, organizations with dark agendas, you know, can keep themselves alive is because, you know, if people, if population are pushed to desperations. So if you're pushing, you know, 33 million people, you know, into desperations, recruitment, you know, for a different agenda is quite easy in that sense. And I think, you know, we all, there's a global interest, you know, in the of stability in the region there as well. And that's, I would like to believe that, you know, the G20 leaders will be finding ways and avenues, you know, of supporting, you know, Afghanistan in one or the other ways. UNICEF and other international organizations are discussing, you know, with the multiple stakeholders, you know, of how this can be done, you know. I do want to believe that, you know, the G20 will come to a consensus and we will be finding ways to operate in Afghanistan. I think it's important that, you know, we keep education, nutrition, health, water and sanitation, protection, you know, for children, you know, and other social programs alive in Afghanistan. Otherwise, you know, it will just build the frustrations, you know, and other people might be coming with other solutions.
Yeah, speaking of that, I mean, what is the Taliban's response to stopping COVID-19 and these other humanitarian crises on the ground and distributing vaccines? And just curious to know, are they trying to do it to make sure that they have they keep the population knowing that they are the legitimate government and providing services? So this is a way to respect us, or is it the Taliban wants things to get so bad that people have no choice but to support them? I'm just kind of.
I do want to believe, I mean, from our experience, you know, even before the exit of the international communities in Afghanistan, we had a divided Afghanistan where it was government controlled and Taliban controlled. Now for UNICEF, you know, an important notion is impartiality. We do not look, you know, what we do know is that wherever there are populations, there are children, and those children need our attention. So we will discuss with any stakeholders, you know, any duty barriers, you know, and to see what can be done so that they can be upholding, you know, the rights for the children. That's, you know, the convention of the rights of the child, you know, is very important to UNICEF, and impartiality, you know, is an important, notions which UNICEF is excelling, which then allows us, you know, to do our work and defend the right of the children wherever they are. So we discuss with you, Dipeta. We are not asking for political affiliations. We do not ask for who is us. If there's a community, we know that there are community leaders. We will discuss with those community leaders so that we can, you know, reinforce the rights of the child in these particular communities. So we sat down, you know, with different community leaders, explain, you know, discuss the potentialities, asking for their needs, and then we try to implement them so that health services can be provided in this particular area, nutrition services can be provided in this area, education services can be provided. We were one of the first, organization in Afghanistan, who we signed an agreement or elementary educations, including in Taliban controlled areas with the Taliban themselves, as parameters, and we try to respect them, but which will as well include, education of girls, which we think is critically, for the development of the nations. We are not saying it's easy, and sometimes it takes a little bit of time, but, that's what is needed to be done if we do not want to disenfranchise, children, who are living sometimes in very difficult circumstances.
Well, this is a very fascinating topic because it just touches on all aspects of international issues that we have globally. So just curious to know, the main stakeholders, what's that breaking point that's making this vaccine equity so hard? Is it just vaccine hesitancy in the United States? Is it the politics? Is it the manufacturing companies not wanting to share, or is it the local manufacturers on the ground, particularly in Africa or Latin America? I mean, if we can fix one part of this puzzle, what do you think it would be, and how should we make, what's the best policy for vaccine equity going forward before we can start a new variant?
I mean, in short, it's, less politics, more science. That's my take on it, When we have less politics, probably we will be much more keener of, spreading manufacturers' capacities around the globe, If we have less politics, we would probably have less polarizations on the vaccine itself, and less vaccine hesitancies, less infodemics about the pandemic itself, If you have less politics, probably sharing will become much easier. So I think I would keep it at that because, but the world is complex, and I think, and we are all human beings. I think personally, I would say that, a lot of decisions which were made in the beginning of the pandemic was driven more by fear and panic than rational thinking, I think, which also then, gets manipulated sometimes within politics in itself. So I think, if you want a short answer, yes, less politics and more science, scientific reaction to it, If you want a more complicated one, then we can say, well, it should not be just being, it should not be just about vaccine donations. It should be about helping different parts of the world, to acquire the same capability than richer countries. We should be strengthening the health system as a whole, not just in some part of the world, but globally, so that we can have global health security. We should be holding people accountable, in terms of how money is spent. There should be more investment into the social sectors in particular, in low and middle income countries. I think this would be my longer answer. But I do want to believe that, if we are not taking the lessons learned from this pandemic, very seriously and starting to apply them, we might be finding ourselves in a much more complicated situation in the future with another pandemic, which might be much more complicated than this one.
All right, well, thank you so much, Dr. Campo. This has been a very nice meeting with you and discussing global issues from the Black perspective. And I really appreciate your time today.
It's a pleasure.
And that does it for Global Takes. Thank you so much for joining our podcast today. I hope you were inspired, informed, and ready to change the world. Please join Black Professionals in International Affairs. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And of course, please write a review. Thank you so much.